Hey, I'm tired of being on Fox News about Trump. I want MSNBC. Oh, I need to go back to sleep. It's only 3 o'clock. Wake me with the governor's special ice cream.
What we want is our first graders to have...
What?
...have a Glock on their hip.
They put that debt on my grandchildren.
The most transparent administration in our state's history.
Based on ideology rather than the facts.
Well, I'm a doodler.
I love that so much. Is it wrong of me to love that so much? Is it wrong of me to take joy?
We have the best weed in the United States.
I do love it. Let's start here. Sleepy J. Inslee's staff wrote a letter for him. He Governor woke from a nap, found the letter sitting there for him that he signed, apparently. It's about making sure that two Republicans were not involved in propping up a sham election. Oh, here? No. Not in Washington State. No. In Phnom Penh, Cambodia. Yeah. That's thinking, Jay. This is all because Senator Doug Erickson, who I really like from Ferndale, had asked a couple of Republican representatives, Drew McEwen, who have met and seems like a person, nice person, and Brandon Vick, to go to Cambodia to observe the election. Both of the lawmakers got there, looked around, and said, you know what? I'm out. This thing looks like it's a setup and a scam, and they weren't going to be part of it. So they came home. And and Inslee's staff typed out a letter for him to go be concerned about this election, because it's just another chance to hit Erickson, and by hitting Erickson, to hit Trump and to hit Republicans. But let's just think of this. I-1639, the gun control initiative that will force you to give up your health care privacy if you want to buy a semi-automatic weapon. I say again, it will force you to give up your privacy in health care if you choose to buy a semi-automatic rifle or pistol in this state. It is illegally formatted. The legislature tied Kim Wyman's hands. She couldn't kick the thing back. It contains at least 17 topics. The law says initiatives can only contain one. That's going on the ballot. Sleepy J. Inslee, he doesn't care about that. Sideshow Bob, of course, our part-time attorney general, full-time seeker of gubernatorial campaign donations.
The law matters.
Except for this. It doesn't matter here. What, Jay? No, it says in the Constitution, right? The way the initiatives are supposed to work.
The law matters. It's not an abstract notion, the law. The law has a huge impact on the people of this country, and that's why upholding the Constitution matters so much.
Oh, I see. Well, the Seattle income tax is illegal. You got nothing to say about that. Neither did Sleepy J. Inslee, but he's all concerned about elections in Cambodia. Seattle gun tax is illegal. Sideshow Bob had nothing to say about that, right? Even though it's illegal.
The law matters.
No, it doesn't. Not to you. There's no voter ID in our state, but Sleepy J. Inslee's upset and spun up in a tizzy because of an election in Cambodia. We have a vote-by-mail scam, and we had the Dino Rossi versus Chris Gregoire scam. None of those guys stood up to talk about that. But Cambodia? Yeah. That letter was waiting for Sleepy J when he woke up to have his oatmeal at 9, or no, I 9, what am I saying, 11 o'clock in the morning. This all of this, as you look at the West Coast, all of these things are going to begin to appear. Did you hear about this in Oregon? A guy is a military guy. He's been located in Oregon because his command chain wants him to take some specific classes so he can be an instructor. I think it's with the Air Force. And the house they purchased turned out, I'm laughing, I shouldn't be, turned out to be a meth house.
A series of campers, tents, and RVs on a sprawling Jefferson property. They bought it last year, and there's a nice big house on it, but they can't live there.
Of the 23 rooms that we had tested, 23 of them came back positive for meth contamination.
Now he's camped out on the property, dodging leftover burn piles with drug needles. The home is gutted now. They started cleanup, but were told by lawyers it was best to stop while a lawsuit to get everything paid for played out.
My opinion is that this is being, a process has been slowed down hoping that we'll get to a place where we're desperate enough to settle for a lower price.
You bet it is. I found that on Como News. I think the story came out of Oregon. So all this stuff's going on the West Coast. You know there's been homes like this here. Sleepy J. Inslee concerned on Election Day about elections in Cambodia. Your thoughts on meth houses?
You got the best weed in the United
States. I figured you'd say that. Something told me you would. Up and down the West Coast, Russian and Chinese and Mexican and Honduran drug cartels are operating. Why? Because of the functional legalization of heroin. It's been functionally legalized.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United
States.
Thank
you, Heroin Dan Satterberg, for reminding me of that. It's been legalized. What goes hand in hand with drug trafficking? If you've been listening to the show for a little while, you know I've gone into great depth and detail on why sex trafficking goes hand in hand. Here's the Reader's Digest version. People who are addicted to heroin or meth will sell their bodies to have it. The drug cartels say, okay, I will use your body, we'll turn you into a slave, we'll give you drugs that cost us almost nothing to make. You're gonna pimp yourself out, and we're gonna beat you and turn you into a slave, mind and body. They do that, and they get a 700% return on investment in a $150 billion business to them that is less risky than running drugs. Now they don't stop saying, "Okay, well we've got the drug addicts. They're great." They want fresh slaves, so they try to enslave other people. Up and down the West Coast, this is going on. A postal worker was reunited with a girl this man rescued from sex slavery. She had been held slave for months, beaten, tortured. He'd heard her whimpering in the bushes because she jumped out of the car of the sex traffickers.
And I heard this crying, this desperate crying. I saw her hiding behind a kind of bush, kind of tree.
The father of four says his instincts kicked in when he saw a 16-year-old girl sobbing in someone's front yard.
She started to point to her arms, saying that they were putting things on me, they were putting things on me, they are coming to get me.
Ivan quickly realized the girl had just escaped being held captive by sex traffickers.
They told me that they were taking me somewhere to hurt me, and then I kind of just thought I'd grow the balls and jump out the car.
Ivan stayed with Crystal until the police arrived and took her to a nearby hospital.
Don't worry. Nobody's going to take you. I'm here for you. Don't worry.
The 16-year-old says she was drugged, tortured, and sexually abused for 3 months. Until Ivan found her, she didn't think she would ever see her family again.
I just cried all the time and prayed that I'd get to see my mom again.
And today, Crystal met Ivan again, this time to thank the letter carrier for stepping in to get her to safety.
Ivan himself is a hero for saving me, even though he doesn't think it.
Thanks to Q13 for that. Up and down the West Coast, drug cartels, Chinese, Mexican, Russian, Honduran are locating here. Goes hand in hand with sex trafficking. We're not going to take care of youth gangs.
Since 2002, we've reduced the average daily population of young people in the juvenile system at the Youth Services Center from 212 to fewer than 50.
And Sleepy J. Inslee, concerned about elections in Cambodia, are you going to rescue these kids from sex slavery?
Rescue America, and we will rescue America from the grasp of an unhinged narcissist.
So focus again, nothing to do with the state, and the man wants to run for president. Great news. We will have an opportunity to tell America all about Sleepy J. Inslee.
Talking to dozens of these young people is we need to turn the world over to this generation as quickly as we can.
All the things Sleepy J. Inslee says and does.
That is a brain dead policy.
And it's going to be great to share with America the gift that is Sleepy J. Inslee. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. And on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Want to check in with the election, see what's going on there? Go to the text line. Anything you want to talk about on the text line, 800-465-8770. There's going to come a reckoning, and it's going to come on immigration. And on immigration, when we finally have had enough, You know what's not going to work is one size fits none. I want to talk about that as well as the media's decision to emotionalize this to such a degree that we can't get anything done. The numbers are stunning on the media coverage on that. So I like emails like these. We'll take a quick diversion from the planned programming layout and respond to this. It's from Keith. I'm one of your liberal listeners. I tune in because you're actually kind of a funny guy, and I think you're right about a lot of things, namely transit. However, I'm just sickened by what you said about Governor Inslee. You're really good at being cynical and at pointing out some of his foibles, but I just challenge you with this. If you were the governor of the state of Washington, how would you act differently? And don't give me platitudes, give me details. Keith. All right, start here. Number one thing I'd do if I were governor of the state of Washington is go to the secretary, the treasury, secretary of the treasury, and I'd look at the debt situation, and I would announce it to the citizens of Washington state. I'd announce that though we've made great strides on the debt, we're still in debt and that we need to pay that off. Why would I do that? Because I'd be making a case. The next case I would be making would be for modernizing our approach to some of our biggest expenses, namely transportation. One of the reasons that a con artist like Roger Millar, who I would instantly fire on the spot if I were the governor and he was reporting to me, he'd instantly be gone. The reason I'd make the case on the debt to adjust the spending phenomena would be to go in and create an open market for this. Right now in our state, we pay 35 to 50% more every single time we undertake a construction project for the following reasons. Number one, we pay this prevailing wage, which is insane. What that means is even if you're not a, if you're a non-union shop and you bid a job lower than a union shop, you still have to pay the prevailing wage that the unions determine. It's the way the unions make sure that they don't cost more than non-union shops, and it's cronyism. If I were the governor, I would make a demand to the citizens of Washington state to allow us to make this an open marketplace. If a non-union entity is able to do this cheaper and just as well than a union entity, then so be it. The next thing I would do, having done that, would be go to the Washington State Department of Transportation, fire Millar, and fire everybody who helped who works for him, and announce that it is not impossible to get people out of congestion, and that our focus will be on moving people in the way that people choose to be moved, which right now is cars. I would go for an open bid nationwide, in fact, internationally, to help us create the most significant technology-driven infrastructure in the country to help move cars around in a more sensical, logical manner, including things like building tunnels for cars below cities versus just for the buses and creating belt routes around cities so that you don't have to go north or west in a constrained environment like this. I would lay this out to great big tech companies like Facebook and Google and others who want to get into the game saying, hey, you know what? Come here. We'll help be a playground for you so long as you don't try to take over the mobility of our citizens with robotic cars that government's going to control. Then I would go to the public teachers unions and I would sit down with them and say, I don't think I have the political heft to be able to do away with your union. If I did, I would do that. But I don't think I have that heft and I don't think I could get the votes to do that, because you're too scared of a force. But I will tell you this. I'm going to go speak to the citizens of Washington state and say, why do we have a system where teachers with proven bad records are allowed to stay on and where an excellent teacher doesn't earn any more than a substandard teacher? I'll go make that case to the citizens of Washington state that this has to do with unions trying to protect the number of teachers versus the quality of teachers. So I don't think I have the political heft to shut your union down. If I did, I would, because I think you're harming the children of Washington state. But you're going to change those following things. Secondly, it's against the law to strike in this state. I will enforce that law. You don't get to strike as teachers. I'll enforce the law. If you strike, I'll take advantage of the law to be able to hire in non-union teachers into those positions. So don't try that with me. And if you want to maybe experiment, try it in a small district and see how quickly I act. Then I would go to the Department of Health and Human Services and divisions like that and go in through a straight house cleaning, starting with Western State Hospital. I would fire the entire executive team of Western State Hospital to say, You lost 25,000 master keys. You had three criminals escape who were violent psychotics because over a period of 5 to 6 years, they were able to whittle down the bars on their cages and get out because not a single person came by to do a security check. You allow dangerously mentally ill people to shop in a mall you've built on your property, dressed in street clothes with cash in their pocket, and are able to leave. You've taken bedridden human beings who are supposed to be turned in their beds and cared for in their beds and fed in their beds, and you have left them to starve and unturned. They've developed bed sores. Some of them have not been given the proper antipsychotic medication, so these human beings you've been tasked with caring for have horrifying psychotic episodes. You're done running this hospital. You've lost this federal funding. And then I would put out a search for teams that want to come in and run the hospital in the right way. In terms of being governor, I may not be able to have direct control over Sound Transit, but I'd have this control. I'd have the control of being the bully of the state in terms of presentation. If I were governor of Washington State, I would give a speech exposing the criminals that are Sound Transit and what they're doing to Western Washington, how it's eating up resources for the rest of the state. I would compare their movement of less than 3% of trips to the money that we could be spending on functional things within our cities. Lastly, as governor of the Washington state, I would enforce the immigration laws in concert with the federal government in a humane, non-one-size-fits-everybody way. That's the beginning, Keith. So, yeah, I can criticize, but I can also tell you what I would do. I hope that helps. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. The glass house called the Old Gray Lady, the New York Times, has never been more likely to be crashed down with a brick than it is today. So both Tom and I are here nodding our heads. What's the joke? The white guy head nod. No, don't tell me you're not doing it too.
That's the extent of dancing.
Is that it? No, no, I dance, man. Oh,
really?
Oh yeah. I go out and see this Earth, Wind, and Cover fire band, or cover band. I light it up. People stop and watch. I light it up.
Can't wait to see a viral video of that.
That's not going to happen, but I light it up. Let's do a contrast and compare, shall we? You hear about this. There's a quarterback named Drew Locke. And so he tweeted something. And it was when he was in middle school. He's now a college quarterback at the University of Missouri, Missouri. He was 14 years old. An anonymous person has surfaced these tweets. He's 14 when he wrote this. One was, ha, 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 kids, and it's a slur for gay people. Pile of sticks. You know what I mean? Ha, 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 kids, a gay slur. 14 wrote these. The other one reads, quote, could Geico really save you 15% more on car insurance? Do black guys like Flamin' Hot Cheetos? Ha, ha, no offense, black guys. So he was in middle school when he wrote these. He has issued an apology. This is part of the glass house of the Old Gray Lady, the New York Times. It is. So this college quarterback in middle school, 14, wrote these words. He, quote, said, I was recently made aware of five tweets from my eighth grade year in middle school that were perceived as insensitive and inappropriate. An anonymous person brought these to the attention of the Columbia's Daily Tribune, and I appreciate having the opportunity to address them. I didn't intend to offend anyone with those messages, but I understand this is an example of how words, even when written by a young teenager, can be interpreted by others as newsworthy, harmful, or inappropriate. What I love about this apology is that he says how it could be interpreted as newsworthy. this guy's someone to watch. Newsworthy. I can see how some would consider it newsworthy, Drew Locke wrote. Oh, the old gray lady? They still have not apologized and don't intend to for hiring Sarah Jeong. Oh, I got yelled at on the text line, 800-465-8770. Someone had written to me and said, I'm saying her name wrong. I sound French. I'm trying to find it. Yeah, someone took me to task. Here it is. Hey, Todd, Tom K. For what it's worth, Sarah Jeong is a Korean ethnicity, so her last name is actually pronounced Jeong. Your version sounds French. Well, it's because I don't speak Korean. I think that's a decent defense. I don't think that's... Is it racist to not speak Korean? Tom, will you look in to see if it's racist to not speak Korean?
On it.
Hey, thanks. So they have yet to apologize to New York Times for hiring this lady.
Everything is implicitly organized around how men see the world. And not just men, how white men see the world. And this is a problem. This is why so many things suck.
So the glass house of the New York Times, this young quarterback apologizes in a clever way and takes a brilliant shot at the media during that recovery or that apology. Sarah Jeong, if we had a functioning thinking Republican Party strategist, they would be saying to every single Republican candidate who's interviewed by the New York Times to say, yes, I will do the interview, but it must lead with my statement on your hiring of a racist. I will do an interview with you. I'll sit down with you, but it must lead. The article must lead with a word-for-word verbatim repetition of my condemnation of you hiring a racist named Sarah Jeong. Jeong, pardon me. Not that she should be fired. That's up to the New York Times. I think she's a racist. I don't think you tweet that many times that you hate white people and you want to see white genocide. I've heard other people say, oh, no, she's just being provocative. That's not provocative. The glass house for the Times continues. They hired Brett Stevens, who says he's at the Times because he's never Trump.
The president is goading them. He is inciting them. He is not saying, get rid of this turbulent priest, but he's not a child who doesn't know that he's carrying a loaded gun. The blood will be on his hands the moment some whack job thinks that he's carrying out the instructions of the president and goes into a newsroom like the one behind us or the one in my news organization or yours and murders people.
Okay, putting aside that Brett Stevens had nothing much to say about the congressional baseball murder attempt of Steve Scalise or the recent attempt to kill Steve Scalise by a guy who had bomb-making materials and ammo and receipts for guns. They couldn't find the guns. Here's the further glass house of the New York Times. When someone goes nuts and decides that, yeah, Sarah Jeong, who's on your editorial board and says there should be genocide of white people and decides to go out and do that, try to kill a bunch of white people, then we'll go right back to Brett Stevens and say, remember when you said that if someone attacked a journalist, it would be Trump's fault? We have tracked this back to Sarah Jeong. It's a massive glass house, and every single Republican candidate or office holder who's ever interviewed by the New York Times should say, I'm glad to interview with you, but it must lead with my statement of condemnation for your support in hiring of this racist. Now, we will come back and get into, what do we do? Wrap up the show with a personal note. My gosh, it's gone quickly.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herbert Show, AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Of course, on podcasts, if you don't have the podcast yet, do the world of right-leaning media a favor and subscribe to that. Just text the word podcast to 800-465-8770. And that really brings us up in the iTunes world. That's important because the left, I mean, they're not even trying to be shy anymore about wanting to try to put the genie back in the bottle. They don't like this digital media, this social media. Plus, another ask, if you are listening to the podcast right now, Would you pop over and leave a review, particularly if you like the show? I mean, if you don't like it, fine, be honest, but why would you be listening? So if you listen to the podcast and you love it and you think it's worth 5 stars, will you do that? Because that kind of forces Apple's hand to show it to more people. Hey, on a personal note tonight, you know, yesterday I had on the program my friend Boyd Rogers, who was my second ever radio producer. It was when I moved from Spokane down to Salt Lake City to work under a legendary guy in talk radio, an absolute legend named Brian Jennings. Well, and all defense to Brian or a deference to him. There's a lot of people who say, oh, Brian's a legend in his own mind. Well, look, the fact that I can say the name Brian Jennings and have everybody in radio know who he is, it means something. Brian was the guy who brought the hot talk format to the nation, started in Seattle and took it across the nation. I'm really aware of the fact that I stand on the shoulders of giants who helped build this industry. I will never forget it. The story of how that relationship began was a fascinating one for me, and it almost didn't happen. I realized that I wanted to be a talk radio host early on, but I never thought I could be, because I'd hear Paul Harvey doing the news and then the rest of the story. And I would listen to it with my dad, and it was my secret pleasure in high school. My dear friend and I, best friend since seventh grade, he is a brother to me, Matthew, and I would sneak out in the car before he left school. He moved away. We would listen to the rest of the story, you know, when we weren't listening to punk rock or The Who, etc. But I thought, I can't do that. Paul Harvey's a newsman. Then when I moved to Seattle, and I started to hear actual talk radio, and Cairo, guys like Jim French, who also did storytelling, I thought, man, people make a living doing this. Then I moved to San. A friend of mine told me you need to listen to Rush Limbaugh. You got to do that. But she called him Rush Limbaugh. She said he's like you, but far better at it. And hell of a thing to say. Then when I lived in San Francisco, I'd finally gotten into radio. My best friend's dad invited me down to work in radio. Not a great time in my life, and I didn't do a great job as a salesperson because it wasn't a great time in my life. But I knew then and there that I wanted to be in talk radio. And it was because I listened to this giant of a radio station, KGO, San Francisco. I can still remember the hosts. One of them got put in prison, actually, for having child porn. Bernie Ward got put in prison for that. Ron Owens, Ron with two N's, a liberal former kindergarten teacher, had the number one morning show in that city. I would listen to that constantly and disagree fervently with everything Ron Owens said. But my gosh, this guy could do it. So I made the decision then and there. I'm getting into talk radio. And it was bizarre. It was stupid what I did. Stupid. I mean, think of this stupid idea. I used my 4-track recorder, a Tascam recorder, that I used to record music on, to do talk radio. So I was the host, I was the caller, I was the big voice, and I mixed it all together. So I would actually be calling myself and responding to myself and arguing with myself. And then I would mix it down and put it on tape, and I'd listen to it in the car thinking, could I do this? Could I actually do talk radio? Isn't that a stupid idea? And then I took those stupid tapes, really dumb, and I started to send them to friends in the mail saying, what do you think of this? Some people thought it was real. Other folks knew I was faking it and said, yeah, this is so you. But what a stupid thing to do. So finally, I got up the nerve to really try this thing. And I moved home to Spokane. And you want to talk about stupid. In my mid-20s, I moved into my mom's basement so I could save money on rent. You know how embarrassing and belittling that was? There I was, living in my mom's basement, in the dark room. I mean, almost like a cliched Gen Xer, or like we think of as some millennials now. And I went to work in radio sales. Did a better job at that. Still, I'm not a great salesperson. I'm a great presenter. I'm a great closer. I'm really good at running sales teams, but I'm just not good at the mechanics of being a salesperson. All the detail stuff is, I'm sorry, I'm not skilled at it. Great evangelist. I understand sales and marketing and all that, but being the salesperson, I'm not good at it. Took me years to admit that. But I did better and did some good billings, but it wasn't where I wanted to be. I knew I wanted to be in talk radio. So I went to the smallest radio station in Spokane. And my buddy Dave hooks me up with the owner, who is a guy you've heard on the radio, a guy named Tom Koch, Sound Investing. is his company. You've heard him on the air here. I went, I appealed to him and said, look, I got to be in talk radio. And you know what I gave him? Some of those stupid tapes, those dumb ideas. And he gave me a shot. Halloween night and the night after, I did that. First ever radio show. The first caller to that show was my mom. Stupid idea to have my mom call. She is a liberal. She does not like the medium of talk radio particularly. Because this is NPR. Second caller was a friend. The producer that night was another friend, a different Dave, who produced for me, taking calls. Had never been in radio. Stupid idea. Those two shows, of course, I recorded. Shared the results with Tom, and then I panicked. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. I didn't follow up. Stupid idea. Waited about 30 days. Finally, the first Dave, who introduced me to Tom, said, hey, Tom asked about you. You came in and did a couple of shows, and you didn't go back. I knew I had to go in. I went in. I went in strong. I'll tell you what. I'll do a show here. I'll keep 35% of the revenue that you sell on the show, and I'll keep 55% of what I sell on the show. We shook hands. We did the deal. Suddenly, I started to do a talk show. 2 hours a day and then 3 hours a day in the morning. You know what was stupid? I chose to go up against Rush Limbaugh. Absolutely stupid. That was stupid. That was dumb. On a tiny little station. But do you know what I did? Local. Yep, I launched my show by going to a town hall meeting put on by the late Tom Foley. And he called on me at that event. I'd raised my hand and he said, yes, yes, you, sir, a son. And I said, hi, Speaker Foley, my name is Todd Herman. I'm launching a radio show. And I told him the station and where we're going to launch it. And the name of the show is going to be Back Talk with Todd Herman. And I intend to use that show, Speaker Foley, to see that you are not reelected. And he laughed. And he said, well, son, a lot of bigger people than you have tried. And I wish you luck. I said, yeah, Mr. Speaker, the name's not Son, it's Todd Herman, and I will succeed. I'd laid down a marker. The end of that election period, I was proven right. Yep, Spokesman Review did a little poll. Listeners to my radio show helped change that vote. Helped, in fact, make the race even more of a national concern. Tom Foley lost. And in fact, he took my call the next day. I told him it wasn't personal. He laughed in my face. How'd this all work out to get into a legend's eyesight? Well, stupid idea. Going to do a small town radio show on the smallest station and going after a worldwide audience by taking on the Speaker of the House and becoming his prime, his, I don't want to say enemy, prime opponent. Not the people he was running against, but me. I became his prime opponent. I became identified as the guy who took down Tom Foley for many people. I was at my mom's house. I'd made the decision. I gave myself 1 year to get out of radio if it didn't work. 1 year. That 1 year point had gone by 30 days. The phone rang. I'll never forget the call. I thought it was someone pranking me. Went like this. Todd Herman? Yes? This is Brian Jennings. I think your show is hot. A series of dumb ideas led me to a phone call with a radio legend. Well, or some people will say legend in his own mind. And I wouldn't be here today, albeit with a 15 to 20 year break in between. The stupid ideas, are they all that stupid? This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.